Welcome to Power Play. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Evan Solomon. Coming up on the program, Canada's new defense chief steps aside. What forced him out?
It is deeply troubling that the Canadian chief of defense staff has had to step down only a month after assuming command.
What is he accused of? Why is the highest ranking leader in the military, the chief of the defense staff, Admiral Art MacDonald, under investigation after less than 2 months on the job? And what is the latest on the parliamentary probe into the former chief of the defense staff, General John Vance, who is also the subject of a House of Commons committee probe over allegations he engaged in inappropriate sexual relationship with an officer under his command, allegations he denies, by the way. In moments, we'll bring in the defense minister, Harjit Sajjan. Then we'll get opposition reaction to that. Also today, vaccines are coming, but why is there so much confusion about the rollout?
The projections that we have see 88 million vaccines of both approved products in country by September.
Just yesterday, retired General Rick Hillier said Ontario couldn't even commit to vaccinating everyone by September. What about Quebec? Just today, that province started vaccinating seniors over the age of 85 who live in their own homes, starting with, by the way, this woman, Giselle Fortin. How long will it take to expand access? CTV's Vanessa Lee has the latest on the vaccine issue, plus boiling over. A scathing review of Prime Minister Trudeau's promise to end First Nations boil water advisories. Check this out.
I am very concerned and honestly disheartened that this long-standing issue is still not resolved. Access to safe drinking water is a basic human necessity.
Concerned, disheartened. A new report from Canada's Auditor General gives a scathing review to the government's promise to end long-term boiled water advisories in Indigenous communities. What went wrong? Why did that promise get broken? The Auditor General joins us, Karen Hogan, who you just saw. So does the minister responsible for ending those boiled water advisories, Mark Miller. He'll be here. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. Military is in chaos. One former senior retired general I spoke to earlier today said the institution is starting to shake, and it's no wonder. Last night, the newly minted chief of the defense staff, Admiral Art MacDonald, abruptly stepped aside after less than 2 months on the job. But the government will not say why, except to confirm he's being investigated. Now, this comes as the former chief of the defense staff, General Jonathan Vance, is also the subject of a House of Commons committee probe over allegations he engaged in an inappropriate sexual relationship with an officer under his command. Again, allegations he's denying. Remember, General Vance launched something called Operation Honor, the initiative that's meant to crack down on sexual misconduct in the military. So what is happening now? Why was the new CDS not vetted properly to find all this out earlier? Let's bring in the Minister of Defense, Harjit Sajjan. Minister, always good to have you on the program. What can you tell us? I know there's an investigation, but we don't know what the allegations against Admiral MacDonald are facing. Are they allegations of sexual in nature? Are they allegations of spying? Give us an idea of what they are.
Evan, I mean, you and Canadians obviously rightfully have a lot of questions in this regard, but unfortunately, I can't answer those questions because there is an ongoing investigation, and we need to protect the integrity of that investigation to allow the investigators to do their job.
But Minister, I don't want details. Can you just tell us the nature of the allegations? Again, there's a wide menu of why a CDS would step aside after less than 2 months. Can you give us any idea of the nature of the allegations?
Unfortunately, Evan, this would be, again, impeding the investigation. And like I said, I know there's a tremendous thirst for having questions answered. And I, too, want the questions answered. But we also know that in our society, the police are independent and the investigation does need to occur. But one thing that we can say is that we, anytime allegations do come forward, that we take it extremely seriously and, more importantly, very quickly pass through the appropriate authorities for the appropriate action.
Okay, so let's get that. When were you made aware of these allegations?
Evan, I can say recently I was made aware, and as of yesterday, Admiral McDonald was made aware of the NIS investigation, and then he voluntarily stepped aside, and hence the reason why Lieutenant General Wayne Eyre was appointed as acting Chief of Defense Staff. But one thing I can tell you is, regardless of rank, regardless of position, that we will take action and we will take all allegations extremely seriously. So whether you're a general or whether you're a corporal, it does not matter. These are some of the things that we've been working on for some time, and that we need to continue on this to create that culture change that we have been working towards.
Yeah. Okay. When you say these are the things, I'd like to know what things. But Admiral let me just go back to timeline. Admiral McDonald, when he was the CDS yesterday, sent out a memo to the forces thanking Major Brennan, who spoke to Global News about her allegations against General Vance. He thanked her for that. He said, "I can assure you the concerns she raised will be fully and fairly investigated. We are also assuring all necessary and requested support is available to her." Let me ask, so that was yesterday. Did he know he was under investigation when he sent out that note? Or when he sent out that note, did an investigation and allegations against him come out yesterday after he sent that note out?
All I can say, Evan, is that when it comes to CFNI investigation, it's up to them to disclose and look at where the investigation is going to go. But what all I can say is that yesterday he was made aware of the CFI NIS investigation, and that is at the time when he went on voluntary leave, and we appointed an acting Chief of Defense Staff in his place.
Okay, so you were aware of it yesterday as well, I assume. Were you aware of it only when he went on voluntary leave, or were you aware of the allegations before he submitted that he would voluntarily leave?
I was made aware of that voluntary leave yesterday, and hence the reason why I made my decision to appoint Wayne Eyre as the acting Chief of Defense Staff. But Evan, one of the important things here is I know that we have a lot of questions, and we will get the answers, and we will get to the bottom of this. But most important thing for all the Canadian Armed Forces members, it's extremely important to state that, one, this is what it means when we say that rank and position has no meaning when it comes to how seriously we take any type of allegations, that we will be investigated.
But sir, it does, and I appreciate that. But I appreciate that. But sir, this is the Chief of the Defense Staff. He would have had a long vetting process to get that job when he was appointed December 23rd to get it. Within 2 months, he's taken voluntary leave because of allegations that have led to a serious investigation. Did nothing come up in the vetting process? Are you concerned the vetting process is clearly inadequate?
No, I mean, I'd say that regardless of what process was taken, one thing I can say that the process was extremely thorough, but that's irrelevant. What's more important is, regardless when an allegation comes in, that it will be investigated, and regardless of rank or position. And that's what I think is important, is the confidence that we're putting into the system here, is that regardless of your position, we are going to take things seriously, and we are going to take the appropriate action. And that's exactly what is happening here. We have a lot more work to do.
Look, fair is fair. You've got two CDSs under investigation right now. But it's not a good look for the military. And you got a Commons Committee investigating allegations against General Vance, the former Chief of the Defense Staff. Can you give us any details on those allegations? What are those allegations, and what other forces are investigating that?
So first of all, you talked about it doesn't look good. I think that's irrelevant how it looks. And we don't make decisions based on how the perception is. We're basing it on allegations come forward. We have a process in place. And our institution is far greater than any individual. We have wonderful leadership in the Canadian Armed Forces that will carry on. And any type of allegations, whether it's with General Vance and the work that's taking place there, or currently with Art McDonald, a thorough investigation will occur. And regarding General Vance's allegations, there are a lot of questions regarding that. Independent of the CFNIS investigation there, We will be conducting an independent investigation to look at what happened. And that will be extremely thorough.
Will the RCMP get involved?
When it comes to who gets involved, Evan, right, this is where a minister doesn't make decisions. This is about the police themselves are independent and they have to make their own decisions. And as a former police officer, I can assure you, this is one thing I will never do is compromise any investigation. But rightfully so, you do have questions. Canadians have questions. And a lot of Canadian Armed Forces members have questions as well. But our institutions are far stronger than any individual. But more importantly, I want to tell all the Canadian Armed Forces members are out there who have the courage to come forward, that they will be listened to, that we will take things seriously, and we will take the appropriate action. And what you see right now is an example of that.
Sir, when were you aware of the allegations against General Advance? You have said that you were only aware of it after Global News first reported the allegations. Opposition critics who are standing by had asked if you had heard these reports before. There had been some reporting again by Global that the former military ombudsman, Gary Walborn, talked to you about this years ago. Did he talk about that years ago with you? When was the first time you heard allegations, any allegations against General Advance?
Evan, I want to make this very clear, okay? I was shocked just as much as everybody else when I learned about the allegations about General Vance. And I know how difficult it is when I say this, that I can't talk about my conversation with the ombudsman. I'd love to sometimes. I know it'd make actually things easier, but I can't, because that institution is about independence so that Canadian Armed Forces members can have the confidence to come forward. But I can assure you in this case as well, any information, if it was ever brought forward, was always very quickly sent to the appropriate authorities for the action, because absolutely we have no tolerance for this, Evan. This is for the sake of our Canadian Armed Forces members. Having served there before, that's that piece that's so important to me. Chapter number one, looking after our people, and this is what this is about. And no rank, doesn't matter about your rank, it doesn't matter about your position. Guess what? This is what it means now, zero tolerance.
Okay, you chose Lieutenant General Wayne Eyre as the acting CDS. But he's not the second in command. The second in command of the military, I know he's the head of the land staff, but you do have a vice chief of the defense staff. That is the natural choice to stand in, Lieutenant General Michael Rouleau. He's the VCDS. Why did you jump over him and not choose him to stand in for Admiral MacDonald?
Actually, it's not the case, Evan.
Why didn't you choose him?
No, in fact, actually, that's not the case. Yes, the Vice Chief of Defense Staff has responsibility in terms of in the system, but any one of the three-star generals, the Minister of National Defense, has the ability to appoint the person that he feels is the best person suited to be acting Chief of Defense Staff at a time. And Wayne Eyre is a phenomenal leader. He's got tremendous experience, not only from what he as the current Army commander, but also when it comes to he has been the second in command when it came to our personnel command. He also ran that as well. When you look at his experience, I felt that he was the right person to be the acting chief of defense staff at this time.
Finally, Art MacDonald, the admiral who's now on leave, said yesterday in his memo, "It is my strong belief that the chain of command should be a facilitator to reporting." But you've got two of the former heads of the two CDSs, as you say, they're under investigation now, which it's hard to understand how the chain of command can work on that. Should there be an independent body, an oversight body now on the Canadian military to look into these kinds of allegations?
One is, Evan, currently we do have the current independence in some systems, but I'll be honest with you, everything is currently on the table. We will be looking at the various processes, whether it's from the Ombudsman Office to the Sexual Misconduct Response Center itself, how the military police functions as well. Everything's on the table. We have actually also an independent review going on by the military justice system, plus a panel on the independent review on the systemic racism and gender bias. So this work is ongoing, but what I also want to state is it doesn't matter about the individual here. The military is designed to be built on redundancies. As much as difficult as this is, and absolutely, this is extremely difficult for Canadian Armed Forces member and a shock to all Canadians. But one thing I can assure you, there's tremendous leadership within the Canadian Armed Forces that the institution will continue. And we want to build on the work that Madame Deschamps has started. So I look at this as an opportunity to actually build upon it and make that change that's necessary, that's going to create that culture change.
Right. To be fair, you had that opportunity 2 months ago with a new CDS. He's under investigation. But Minister Sajjan, first of all, I always appreciate you joining us. I hope that I see you on Sunday on CTV's question period as well. There's lots of questions about that and procurement. I've taken a lot of your time tonight. I appreciate it, Minister. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, so that's the defense minister. We've heard from him. What about the opposition? Conservative defense critic James Bazan has been vocal about the investigation into Admiral McDonnell. What does he say in response to this? He's been listening in. And so he's the defense critic for the Conservatives, and so is the NDP national defense critic, Randall Garrison. Haven't seen Mr. Garrison in a while. Good to see both of you. Mr. Bazan, I'll start with you. You just listened to Minister Sajjan. What do you make of how he's responding to this?
Well, he hasn't been honest and open with Canadians, with our members of the Canadian Armed Forces. He does have a duty and responsibility here to inform everyone why Admiral McDonald had to step aside. It's not going to taint the investigation. It's not political interference. It's about information, and everybody deserves to know it. And, you know, I'm just so angry and upset that here we are again dealing with another CDS under a cloud of investigation and a minister that continues to obfuscate rather than deal with the reality. And, you know, you questioned him about, you know, what he did with General Vance. And we all know from media reporting that he was told about the allegations concerning General Vance back in March 1st, 2018. 3 years ago, and he did nothing now, and he continues to sit on the fence when he had a responsibility, as was laid out by former colonel, retired colonel, and military justice specialist Michelle Drapeau, a committee on Monday, who said that he had a duty and a responsibility under Section 45 of the National right. Defense Act to actually get things done and start an investigation back then, and he isn't doing it now. It's all hands off, and that's not the way the Minister of Defense should be operating.
I should tell our audience that Colonel Drapeau will be joining us later in our program. Randall Garrison, what's your take? Again, Minister Sajjan said, don't want to impede in the investigation. Can't even tell us what the investigation is. Could be anything. Didn't tell us. He's being totally hands-off. Do you buy that, Mr. Garrison?
Well, what we have here is a crisis where we need to convince members of the Canadian Armed Forces that allegations of sexual misconduct will be taken seriously. And so before we can actually have that confidence, the minister has to answer the question about when he knew about the allegations against General Vance. If he knew for 3 years that General Vance had more than one accusation of sexual misconduct against him, and he was allowed to serve out his term and retire with congratulations and a pay increase, then the minister's talk about no tolerance makes no sense. And so, again, when we say, you know, the military should have no tolerance, the minister says that like it's a policy. That's an aspiration. What we need to see are actions to make sure that's true. And clearly, the allegations against General Vance raise the question of whether he got away with something for 2 years with the minister's knowledge. And until the minister answers that question, I don't think anybody can have confidence that the military and the government are going to take this seriously.
Okay, just very quickly, Mr. Bazan, where does it go from here? Because, again, Minister Sajjan comes on the program. He says, I just can't talk about it. I won't. There's an investigation that's going to take place. Where does it go from here from your end?
Well, you know, I'm really worried about morale within the Canadian Armed Forces. We know that the women and men in our military deserve to be treated with respect and have a safe workplace. We know that they've lost confidence now in the minister and in senior leadership. We have to restore that. So that means that everything's on the table. We have to look at everything from who the Minister of National Defense is down to what programs and policies need to be brought in. How do we ensure that there is a way to bring forward allegations, to have them investigated without any interference from commanding officers? So everything has to be discussed, and that's one of the things that we're going to tackle at our defense committee. But I think that we need right. some leadership here from the Trudeau government to actually start taking some of these steps now, including starting a board of inquiry.
I'm just trying to figure what out. Mr. Garrison, what is that leadership? Again, there's an I agree the investigation should not be political on that. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't give us more information. I'm all for transparency on this. But what does, you know, if there's an independent investigation, what else can the government do now, Mr. Garrison?
Well, I think they have an obligation to let us know what the difference is here. So if Admiral McDonald is accused of sexual misconduct and he is immediately suspended, then how is that not true for General Vance? And until, again, once you answer that question, once the government gives some leadership on this and shows through action, not just words, that they take this seriously, then we can start to restore confidence of those who serve in the military.
It's certainly hard to know what to do when we don't know what the heck the allegations are. I just don't know why, knowing that, I still don't understand why Canadians can't know at least what the allegations are. That certainly wouldn't jeopardize an investigation. Mr. Bazan, Mr. Garrison, fascinating conversation. I know there'll be lots more. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, so we'll keep following that later in our program, but it's a big day for the vaccine rollout in Quebec. Some people who are 85 and over are finally receiving their COVID-19 shot today, which is great news. Where everyone over 85 and older, they start booking their vaccination processes and appointments online. The first person in Quebec, Giselle Fortin in Laval, Quebec. She got her dose right here. That's pretty nice. Let's get the latest on that rollout with CTV's Vanessa Lee. She's in Montreal. Vanessa, that province is opening up vaccinations to everyone over 85. How quickly are the doses flowing?
Well, Evan, at that first mass vaccination clinic that you just saw there in Laval, we're told that 300 people would be vaccinated today, 600 tomorrow, and then it would ramp up to between 800 and 1,000 people starting on Monday. And really, it was really uplifting to be there to see, because this marks the beginning. Starting on Monday, there will be a number of vaccination clinics open across Montreal, and the bookings for that started today. And so between 8 and noon, more than 70,000 people booked their appointments. That's 12 appointments every single second, Evan.
That is remarkable. The demand is there. It's happening in Alberta. I know the system crashed. Then it got back up and running very quickly in Quebec. Good stuff. CTV's Vanessa Lee giving us the latest as that province begins. Thanks, Vanessa. Great to have you on the program as always. We've got to take a short break. Coming up, though, the Auditor General standing by. She slams the federal government for failing to ensure access to safe drinking water for First Nations community. She joins us next with her damning new report. Stay with us. Federal government failed to support First Nations communities improve access to safe drinking water. That's just one of the many findings released today from the Auditor General of Canada. Another audit warned that further delays to Canadian shipbuilding timelines could possibly leave the Navy and the Coast Guard without ships to defend Canada's waterways, as well as another report calling for better oversight of rail safety in Canada. But I want to really drill down on what's going on in Indigenous communities. So let's bring in the Auditor General herself, Karen Hogan. First of all, welcome. And your work, obviously, tremendously important to Canadians. We will hear from the Indigenous Services Minister, Mark Miller, later in the program. But based on your report, some of the communities have been living under these water advisories for over a decade. What have you found there?
Well, thank you for having me here. I'm happy to talk about the drinking water audit report. It's an extremely important topic. I think everyone would agree with me that in 2021, everyone across Canada should have access to safe drinking water. In our audit, what we found was that Indigenous Services Canada failed to meet its commitment, which was to lift the long-term drinking water advisories that had been in place in First Nations communities by the end of March. In fact, in December, they had they publicly announced that they knew they were not going to be meeting that commitment. So we saw a few reasons why. What we saw was an outdated funding formula that really wasn't reflective of current needs to operate and maintain water systems, and also the need for a better regulatory system so that First Nations could be afforded the same pressures and the same privileges that other communities across Canada have.
I want people just across Canada to let that sink in. You write in your report, 60 boil water advisories remain in effect. 28 of these are more than a decade old. 28 communities for 10 years have not had clean drinking water. Is there any policy fix that can change that? What do they need to do to get these Canadians fresh water?
I mean, I agree with you. I'm honestly disheartened that this is still the situation. I don't think any of us can really imagine that you can't walk up to your tap and pour yourself a glass of water. And for some communities, that's been going on, as you say, for over a decade. It's not just a policy fix. It really is about hearing the first communities and understanding the uniqueness of each of them. It's not a cookie cutter approach. And making sure then that the funding formula is updated. It's been 30 years since it was looked at. It likely doesn't reflect new technologies. And really, we're seeing that it's resulting in the inability of communities to attract and retain skilled water operators. Their salaries are about 30% lower than their counterparts across the country. Is a continued dialogue, but also a better funding formula.
How much of this is COVID-related, the delays? Is that a factor? I know it was a factor in fulfilling some of the promise, but it doesn't seem like that could have been a factor for 28 communities who've been waiting a decade.
Well, we did look at how the government was going to be lifting some of those long-term drinking water advisories, and there were some short-term interim measures that were put into place, which doesn't really address the underlying solution. But in some instances where there were long-term plans that are expected to be in place, in some cases up to 2025, we were seeing delays even before the pandemic in the ability to meet those deadlines. Correct. And so, like everything else across the world, the pandemic is causing unexpected, unforeseen, and unknown delays, and that will likely have an impact here as well.
Just before I let you go, just the last minute I've got with you, one of the audits looked at the timeliness of ships being delivered for national defense in the Canadian Coast Guard. This is like a $77 billion project at 15 ships. What's hindering the ability to replace Canada's aging fleet?
Also, in our audit on the National Shipbuilding Strategy, we looked at exactly that, the timely delivery, and whether or not Canada was getting access to ships when they needed them. We saw a few things there that were likely the cause. And honestly, it's probably a shared responsibility between the government and the shipyards. We saw some delays in properly defining the needs, and so the design of those ships, and then the constructions. Not a concerted follow-up or action by the shipyards to make sure that they reach their target state. And the target state's really important when it comes to this long-term strategy because it avoids the sort of bust and boom that you see in the shipbuilding industry and ensures that the country would have a stable access to have ships being built. So there's many factors at play here, and there really is honestly very little wiggle room left. The government really does need to stay focused on meeting the deadlines now that they've taken some actions to hopefully realign that strategy.
Not only that, obviously, every time there's a delay, the price seems to go up. Another enlightening report. I hope it spurs more action. They always do. Auditor General, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So let's get the government's reaction to part of that report on drinking water. If the status quo carries on, as you just heard the Auditor General say, many First Nations communities will not have reliable drinking water. Is the government committed to these long-term solutions for real? The Liberal government says yes. In 2015, when it set the March 31st, 2021 as the deadline to lift all these outstanding water advisories, didn't happen. And last year, as the Auditor General said, the government admitted it just won't be able to meet that promise. So when will all water advisories be lifted? Let's talk to the Indigenous Services Minister, Mark Miller. He joins us now. Minister, thank you so much. The report of the Auditor General, who was just on the program, says, quote, Indigenous Services Canada has not been adequate to address longstanding problems with safe drinking water for many of Canada's First Nations communities. The report goes on to say almost half of existing long-term advisories have been in place for more than a decade. When does the government finally expect all water advisories to be lifted?
Well, first, thanks for having me on, Evan. And this is work that we welcome from the Auditor General. And the Auditor General is not wrong. The Prime Minister gave me the mandate to lift those advisories by March 2021, and I didn't get it done. And there are a number of reasons for that that are very important. You highlighted a very compelling point and disheartening that a number of those communities have been on a water advisory for 10 years. Now, if you do, I don't want to leave Canadians with the impression that nothing's being done. If you look at those communities that will be on long-term water advisories after March 2021, half of them have clean water being produced, and it's a matter of time before the long-term water advisory is lifted. And the remainder have people on the ground, people working hard to lift those advisories. So when I got into this position as the Minister of Indigenous Services, I sat down with my team and said, what are we doing in terms of the capital funding, in terms of all the funding that goes in and around maintaining a critical water asset, to get those communities and partner with them to lift the water advisories and give them the assurances of the Government of Canada that we're there for the long term? And what came back is what the Auditor General has said, and we signaled as much in December with the announcement of $1.5 billion in funds for operations and maintenance. So that formula that's been outdated for 30 years, it only provided for 80% of funding. We're going to move to 100%. We're going to be able to treat Indigenous water operators equal pay for equal work, which they weren't getting in their communities, that for which they are the pride of the community for working at these critical assets. So this is work that's ongoing, and it's work that we continue to be committed to now more than ever before.
Okay, so I just want to just understand that. When the Auditor General reports says Indigenous services, and I'm re-quoting it, are constrained by an outdated policy and formula for funding the operation and maintenance of public water systems, her words, as she just said, you're saying that report was then, but you're actually have already worked to update the policy and formula for funding the operation and maintenance of public water systems?
Absolutely. The money that we announced in the fall economic statement, there's a chunk of it for sure to account for acceleration of water projects during COVID that have seen cost increases. There's undeniable. But there's another chunk that was squarely directed at operations and maintenance. If you juxtapose what we will be funding in fiscal years 2020 to 2021 and what we were funding in 2015, that represents a doubling. And by 2025, it'll be 3 to 4 times that much. It's just a testament to how underfunded a lot of these critical assets were. And what we are doing as a government to, you know, while this doesn't fall necessarily squarely in what it takes to lift a long-term water advisory, which is done by a community, is essential for maintaining the long-term lifespan of the asset, which is, if it's not maintained, obviously there's a premature aging. So that money's there. We're going to start rolling it out and giving the communities the satisfaction that we will be with them past March of 2021. And partnering with them in the long term. There remain a number of communities that will go past that, but those are projects that I hope to be able to show to Canadians in about a month what the status of them is.
Okay. So just a last question for you, Minister. 60 boil water advisors remain in effect. 28 of these have been 10 years old. I get that. So if I talk to you and see, what's the date when there's zero, and what's the date, as you say, in a month or 2 months? Can you give us any figures that we can measure it against?
Yeah, and look, there's no doubt that COVID was a large factor in a number of these delays. So we've lost the construction season. We're confident that we'll be able to lift a large number of them throughout the summer. There are a number of them that are on longer term builds for a number of reasons, whether we're putting in a road before the construction begins on the water plant. These are elements that I hope, because all Canadians want to know about it, roll out in a sort of a revamped communications product and website that all Canadians can sort of look at individual communities and see where they are at. It's important to note that these communities do have plans, and they're working hard on them, and we'll be there with them for it. We still can't underestimate the continuing impact of COVID, but we're pretty confident about lifting a great number of them over a short time frame, with a few communities that will take a little more time.
Okay. So of the 60, most of them very shortly. We'll see what COVID is going to be a factor in some of the short-term issues there. Minister Miller, got to leave it there, but I do appreciate you coming on and responding to the Auditor General's report. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, meantime in Alberta right now, and what a busy news day, Alberta's United Conservative Party has just released its pandemic budget. Let's get the headline here. Budget. There's a federal budget coming up soon. CTV's Calgary Chris Epp joins us. What's the big headline coming out of Alberta right now, Chris?
Evan, a year ago, the UCP vowed to have us back into the black within 2 years. Then today they announced an $18.2 billion deficit, which is just massive as far as Alberta's concerned. That being said, they're dealing with the same thing every other province and country is, the pandemic that just completely rocked the bottom line of these places. But it came in just almost days. The pandemic started almost days after the last budget came in a year ago. So there's been a lot of retooling, reworking, and looking over the books as the province comes out with this new fiscal plan, which is pretty, really pretty morose looking for a lot of people.
It's going to be tough, and I think everybody's going to look at that and say, you got to rip up the past. It's a brand new budget landscape out there for everybody politically. We're going to be digging into that as we roll through. Chris, great to have you giving us at least the headline, and I know you'll have lots more on CTV Calgary later tonight. Chris Epp, thank you so much, sir. Great to have you back on the program.
Thanks.
We got to take a short break, though. The COVID-19 pandemic, as Chris just talked about, affects every province and everybody in different ways. But studies have found that the pandemic has had a disproportionate impact on women and people of color. We've got the Green Party leader, Annamie Paul, on that next. Stay with us. Is Canada failing minorities in the fight against COVID-19? Last year, the universities of Leicester and Nottingham found the black community is twice as likely to get COVID-19 compared to white people. Here in Canada, health officials warn of racialized communities being hard hit by the spread of COVID-19. It's just not been equal. This has been compounded by racial reckoning with people of color coming forward with what they call racism in the healthcare system. We've seen that. As Canada continues its vaccination campaign, Canada's National Advisory Committee on Immunization has advised racialized communities to be prioritized in the vaccine rollout. Is that happening? Green Party leader Annamie Paul today hosted a roundtable discussion on how the pandemic is impacting black communities, and she joins us on that now. Annamie Paul, Green Party leader, great to have you back on the program. Tell me about this roundtable today and how the pandemic has hit Canada's black community.
Well, first of all, happy Black History Month, Evan. And, you know, as we celebrate, and that was one of the points of the roundtable, we also wanted to educate. We wanted to let people know that this pandemic has hit the Black community in Canada very, very hard. And this is the time to learn the lessons because we're still in the pandemic. I'm here in Toronto, and in Toronto, we know that back in August, and brace yourself for this one, Evan, 1/3 of the cases of COVID infection back in August were amongst the Black community, and we are only 9% of the population here. And there were other months where we were a quarter of the infection rate. So this has hit us very, very hard. I absolutely support the advisory committee's recommendation. It's clearly based in science. It's going to protect a lot of lives. Adults in racialized communities are have been disproportionately hit and should be in line in the next stage of vaccinations so they can protect themselves.
Yeah, that has not necessarily happened, as you know. Can you just tell Canadians who are watching why this is disproportionately affecting racialized Canadians?
I was talking with my sister about this last night, actually, and I was saying to her, Ngozi, think of how we grew up. My grandma and my grandfather, who we lived with in about maybe 700 square feet. She was a personal support worker, and he worked cleaning up factory floors. So they could not leave their jobs. They would have been essential workers right now. Imagine them coming home to an apartment with 6 or 7 people. How are you going to protect yourself? How are you going to keep yourself and your family safe? It's just simply not possible.
So there's a prioritizing. I think there needs to be way more information about that. What else needs to be done right now?
One thing that I would like to hear explicitly right now from every single province is that they will respect the science, they will respect our National Advisory Committee on Immunization, and they will prioritize adults in racialized and marginalized communities that have been disproportionately affected in the next stage. We still haven't heard that firm commitment, and I want the Prime Minister, of course, with the support of all the parties in Parliament, to take that message message to them and to get that firm commitment from the provinces. That's one of the very best things we can do. And then nationally, we still don't have enough disaggregated data about healthcare and how it impacts communities like ours. We need that information. You cannot treat a problem if you do not understand the scale of it.
Absolutely well said. We absolutely need the data. Otherwise, those problems just go, they're invisible. Green Party leader Annamie Paul, by the way, I appreciate that. I know you're celebrating Purim tonight as well. So thanks for joining us and have a happy Purim on that. Great to have you back on the program, Annamie Paul. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I've got a hum and touch and waiting for me.
Now, there you go. Post-interview, it's always a good thing. Coming up, the current and former chiefs of the defense staff, they are now under investigation. Where does that leave the leadership of the Canadian military? Retired Colonel Michel Drapeau joins the press gallery next. We do a deep dive on this. Stay with us. Welcome back to the program. The new chief of the defense staff, Admiral Art MacDonald, now under investigation. He stepped aside late last night. His predecessor, General Jonathan Vance, also under a parliamentary committee probe. Last month, Julie Payette stepped down as the governor general after an independent investigation. Does the Canadian government have a problem vetting its senior appointments? And what should the military, how should the military handle this crisis? Where is this going? The press gallery is here to dig into this crisis. Joyce Napier, who's the CTV News Ottawa bureau chief, of course, joins us. Zian Lum, federal politics reporter with Huffington Post. And our special guest is the retired Colonel Michel Drapeau, a professional lawyer who served 34 years in the Canadian military. And I think we just have a little internet issue with Colonel Drapeau. Joyce, the fallout of this is extraordinary. You obtained this letter from Admiral Art MacDonald, who released it literally yesterday saying, you know, I welcome people coming forward if you have any allegations of harassment in the military. Suddenly he steps aside, but the government won't tell us why. What do you make of it all?
Well, that is kind of enraging. I mean, here's a man who had to step aside. The note that he sent to staff, interestingly enough, Evan, is a note that where he's telling them that he intends to enforce Operation Honor. Now, what was Operation Honor? It's this mission to address and prevent sexual misconduct in the Canadian forces. And a few hours later, he's under investigation and he has to take a leave of absence and get replaced by somebody else. I think that the Canadian people, I really do, deserve to know at least what is the general. We do not what we want to respect absolutely the victims, anybody coming forward, absolutely, again, that's an imperative. However, the minister can and should say what exactly is he under investigation for? If it is sexual misconduct, say so. If it is spying, say so. And then, you know, and then launch your investigation. I mean, here we have another investigation against another CDS when one of the complainants actually came forward on television and was given the green light by the department itself. So we've got to have the same rules for everybody. Right. And either you're transparent or you're not. And clearly the government is not being forward and not being transparent about this.
Colonel Drapeau, first of all, good to have you back on the program.
Thank you.
I just asked the Minister of Defense, Sajjan. He said, I just can't even tell you the details of what the investigation into the newly appointed chief of the defense staff, Admiral MacDonald, even is. So there's no transparency there. As he stepped aside, what does that tell you? And should he be able to give us more details on that? What's your take on all this?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, I have serious difficulty in having the Defense Department investigating this particular thing. If the commissioner of the RCMP had been involved, I don't think we would have expected the RCMP to investigate it. And when we had complained against the Governor General, we went outside government to have it investigated. So first and foremost, I don't think the Defense Department should investigate itself. Just keep in mind that the military police, as it's investigating, is reporting to the vice chief of the defense staff. Vice chief of the defense staff office is two doors away from that of the chief of the defense staff. So any notion of independence, it's gone. The minister at the moment owes a duty, I think, to Canadian, given the rank and the importance of the function performed by the Chief of Defence Staff, to let us know. I mean, we don't want to know about the investigation and its various aspects and so on, but at the very least, what kind of allegations are being made? That, I think, Canadian, and that includes the 60,000 Canadian in uniform in the regular force. They need to know what their top boss is facing in terms of allegation. I think nothing less should be expected from this minister.
Yeah, but Jian, you saw him on the program tonight. He keeps saying, I can't give you any details when he knew, what he knew, either with General Vance or Admiral MacDonald. What do you make of it all?
Well, he doesn't want to. Earlier this week, we felt exactly the same way concerning General Vance. I mean, this guy is really quite something. I'm not disclosing any information. And as a result of it, I think he's not helping. He is enhancing the sense of despair and the sense of, of loss experienced by all members of the forces, either retired or serving. We need to know, and I think the public
needs
to know.
Let me just bring in Ziyan Lam. What's your take on this?
Yeah, this is another kind of crisis that the government is facing that kind of shows, an unwillingness or inability to present some seemingly basic information to the public. The government is in an interesting position because, the people do want answers. There are a lot of questions, but there isn't also much they can say publicly because of the Forces National Investigation Service's current investigation. But the big picture I want to stress is that, this has happened enough times at Rideau Hall, for example, and in the Senate to underline the need for more robust mechanisms to be in place to address, allegations of abuse. Because, one mechanism that comes to mind is, removing barriers that prevent whistleblowers from coming forward. And employees shouldn't have to be stuck in a position where they have nowhere to turn.
Well, and I think Joyce, I got about 30 seconds, but Colonel Drapeau just said the key thing. Then you've got people trying to come forward, and the military is investigating its own leadership. Is there a sense that the independence is lost here?
Well, not a sense. The independence is lost here if the military is investigating its own military, and not only investigating its own military, but the top person at the top of the CDS. And I do agree with Mr. Drapeau. The forces, the 60,000 members, must be looking at this and be quite devastated by all this. I mean, how does it make them look when their big boss behave that way?
Right. I got to leave it there, though. Colonel Drapeau, I hope to have you join us again as we unroll this. Ziyan Lam, great to have you. Of course, Joyce, I see Joyce every day. Great to have you back on the program. And thank all of you for watching. That is your Power Play Day, and what a day in politics it is. Thanks so much for watching. We'll be back here in 23 short hours. Hug your loved ones, and we'll see you tomorrow.